This week, bladders on demand.
This is something that I don't think the FDA has ever been presented with. Like, they may have seen other proposals, but this is definitely far along.
Coming up, we hear about one company's plans to let patients order their own bladder. Hi, I'm Carrie Grenz, and this is The Week, the weekly news podcast from The Scientist. First this week, from the writer's blogs, the FDA receives two unfavorable reviews. The Scientist's Bob Grant has more.
Two reports on the FDA give the agency a bad review recently. First, a report by the Center for Science in the Public Interest finds that resolving conflicts of interest at the FDA could be a lot easier than the agency says. The discrepancy centers around a study this year that examined the effort it would take to replace FDA advisors who have conflicts of interest with qualified people who do not. The agency issued 17 members of advisory committees waivers allowing them to participate as experts despite known conflicts of interest. But the study found 30 qualified, conflict-free researchers that could have filled these positions. The FDA says it would be time-consuming and costly to find replacements. Yet the Center for Science in the Public Interest says it's well worth the time and money. A second report that we blogged on comes from the FDA science advisors themselves. A look at the FDA's scientific expertise found it was inadequate for properly reviewing products, and the safety of consumers could be at risk. The report said that the agency has had the most trouble regulating areas such as systems biology, nanotechnology, and regenerative medicine. To solve this, quote, crisis at the FDA, the Science Advisory Board recommends better infrastructure for sharing data, more external collaborations, better staff recruitment, and of course, more funding.
That was The Scientist's Bob Grant. You can read all our blogs on thescientist.com. Next up, The Scientist's senior editor, Allison McCook, stopped by the studio to talk about her latest feature in the magazine. In the December issue, Allison profiles a company called Tengian, which is developing technology to produce autologous bladders, with the hopes of one day being able to mass produce them. Allison paid a visit to Tengian's Pennsylvania laboratories and told me what it's like.
The basement has got this maze of rooms, and you can kind of walk around. Once you're in the building, you kind of walk around this maze. And it's a maze because the inner rooms have to stay clean. And so you can only kind of like look in through windows into these rooms. So you have like interior windows that you're looking through to see what's going on. And it's the whole bottom part of the building is like this. And then the floor above, some of it is office room, and it just looks like an office, like here, like any other suburban office. But then part of the office doesn't cover the whole top of this, you know, maze of rooms. And this, the part that is an office is kind of open with tubing and stuff, with like little catwalks around it. So you can, from the ground floor of this building, go out on this catwalk and access the pipes that lead down into the basement, into these really clean rooms. Because you can't just walk into a room once it's clean. You know, then it's dirty again.
Right, right.
So you have to access it from above. And that's what the building within a building is.
Oh,
it's kind of this very complicated thing.
So you got to visit it, but they wouldn't let you take pictures there. Why?
Mm-mm.
Why wouldn't they let you?
I think it's proprietary, and I think they also just don't really know what is proprietary, and so they kind of err on the side of caution.
Mm-hmm.
I think they could have really gotten away with it given that the initial research for this was done in an academic center. It isn't, you know, they have patents, they have maybe like 20 patents or something related to this technology, but the original work was published in The Lancet by Dr. Atala, and it was, I think, publicly funded or funded by the hospital. So all of that stuff is not proprietary. And I could see a lot of the things that they were looking at. I just couldn't see the cells. I couldn't see like what instruments they were using or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, what's amazing, what struck me so much in this article is that they're developing this huge infrastructure and yet they haven't even started phase 3 trials yet.
No.
What is your sense of, I guess, the potential success of this company? Do you think that like they've got it down pat and they're probably going to get that approval and be able to manufacture these bladders en masse?
I don't know.
From people that you spoke with, did they seem pretty optimistic?
They all want it to happen. Like, that's clear. But that's sort of, that's with every intervention. You know, everyone wants it to work. I just don't think they have any idea I don't even think people could make it an educated guess. I mean, Tenjon will say yes, and they have millions of dollars from investors who say yes, who believe in it. But this is just a very tricky thing. I don't think scientists, even Atala himself, you know, he's not sure how, you know, making a couple in a lab is easier than doing a mass, like making thousands a year. You know, that's just a whole other way of approaching it. So I think people are, they want it to work, but they're not convinced it will.
And what, so making thousands a year, I mean, what is the market? Who are the patients and how many people? I guess if we can limit it to the states, how many people might be eligible?
Yeah, they estimate it's about 10,000 people a year. So it's a certain kind of bladder problem they call neurogenic bladder. And it's when, for like birth defects like spina bifida, it's when your spinal cord isn't well developed and it just sends these weird signals to your bladder. And the bladder ends up kind of like spasming all the time. And like it's like a muscle, and when that happens, it just gets really stiff. And then it's not working because the whole point of it is to expand, you know, as the urine accumulates, and then shrink when you have to go. But what'll happen is that when the urine starts accumulating in the bladder, since it's so like stiff from all that exercise, the urine either goes up and back into the kidneys, which causes like kidney failure, really bad damage, or incontinence, it just goes down. So it's also the same with people with spinal cord injury. The same thing will happen. There's just like a miscommunication between the spinal cord and the bladder, and it'll get just that rigid shape. And those are the people who need new bladders. And right now they just take a piece from your intestine, the tissue, and they just kind of make a bladder from that. But it has complications because it's intestinal tissue. So things will not go well with it. But there are about 10,000 of those operations a year.
Wow.
And that's what they think they'll be getting. 10,000 is nothing, you know?
Well, right, that's another question I have is 10,000 is nothing. There's a lot of people who could use new livers, new kidneys, a new heart. What's the potential for using this kind of technology and this sort of infrastructure to make other organs?
This technology, I don't know. What they have to do is they have to take biopsies of two different cell types in the bladder, the urothelial and smooth muscle cells. But when you've got a kidney or whatever, I'm not sure the anatomy of those things, but I think it's more complicated than just two types of cells. And it's more complicated than just an elastic bag, which is what they really are just making here. So I don't think this platform, they might be able to use the facility because it's got the isolated rooms and it's got these incubators and you just get a different size scaffold. Like it's possible. You could use it for a different type of organ. But I don't know if the technology would be the same.
Right. Tenjon is likely not the only company out there. I know you mentioned there's another person who is looking specifically at bladders. What else are people trying to do in terms of making autologous tissues?
I think for a while they were trying it with skin, and that failed. I mean, the companies that were working on it, they both went bankrupt. And the reason that Gary Sendor, who's sort of Tenjon's spokesperson, he thinks they failed because the other option is it works quite well, where you take skin from cadavers, and that's something that people, that's a successful intervention. So they don't really need the whole regenerative medicine complicated thing for that. Earlier this year, there was a California company that had successfully made autologous blood vessels. And those tend to work pretty well. The problem is that they said it took 6 to 9 months to grow them. And the concern is that for people who need them, that might be too long. And I know that Tenjon, they want to definitely expand. That's their thing. They're talking about the urogenital space. That's what they want to focus on. But they definitely want to do kidneys. They're seeing this as just the stepping stone to something else. And Atala himself, what he said is, you can't really use this for bladder cancer, this intervention. Because if you take a biopsy from cancer, a cancerous tissue, you don't know, it could just grow into another cancerous tissue. But his goal is to maybe, for patients who, you know, bladder cancer, I mean, that's tens of thousands of people a year have bladder cancer. His goal is to maybe take a biopsy from a kidney, you know, and sort of coax those cells into becoming bladder, a new bladder. So that would really expand the patient population. That's what his sort of goal is.
And do you know whether, I know you bring up the idea of insurance companies reimbursing things like this. Do you know, like, whether they indeed will if you were able to offer this?
Yeah, I mean, I asked a lot about that because that's just something you see so often in healthcare, is when you've got a really small patient population, for a company to make money, they say, to make money from what they're doing, they have to charge a huge amount just to recover their costs, given that there aren't that many people who use it. So that is a really big issue here. I mean, the procedure that we use now to help with neurogenic bladder, that's also expensive. I mean, I couldn't get an exact figure on that specific procedure, but a similar procedure that uses intestine to reshape the bladder costs around $70,000. And that's not including, you know, any kind of side effects or, you know, the long-term follow-up, all that kind of stuff. So that's already pretty expensive. The issue will be is if this procedure is more expensive than that, it has to end up saving money in the long run in terms of by preventing, because it's autologous, so you won't need to take any kind of immunosuppressive drugs. You wouldn't with the other procedure either, but the whole point of this is that it might be more upfront but less down the road. And I think insurance companies will pay for that. That's what Tengian's whole approach is that they will pay for something that works. And the stuff that we have in general is very expensive. Healthcare is always expensive. You know, like they kept talking about this idea of when you get a heart, you have to pay. One hospital pays the hospital that provides the heart $70,000. And that's just an average. And it's before anyone even starts the surgery. That's just a fee you get, excuse me, for getting the organ. So, I mean, healthcare is always expensive. As long as this isn't hugely above the existing procedure, it could be fine. Like, the insurance companies would probably cover it.
Mm-hmm. What's also interesting is the regulatory aspects of it. And you write in there about how the company said the FDA had to actually, like, tailor new
That's standards, what they say. That's their approach. It makes them seem very cutting edge. You know, that even the FDA doesn't know how to handle them. And it's true. I mean, it is true. Like, this is something that I don't think the FDA has ever been presented with. Like, they may have seen other proposals, but this is definitely far along. So I do think that the FDA has had to do extra work up front to get the FDA to kind of be okay with it all along. So it'll be interesting to see. It's the same issue with biologics, you know, like how do you regulate an industry that isn't doing the same thing? You know, it's like, it's not like pills. With biologics and with autologous organs, that's an entirely different kind of product than the FDA is used to dealing with. So it'll be interesting to see how they approach it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's definitely a need. That's what everyone was saying. It's 10,000 people. That's not a huge amount, but, you know, the guy who wrote an editorial to the original Lancet piece that said about 7 people had tried this and it was working. The guy who wrote an editorial to that said he's been getting so many phone calls since that article from people who are saying, I want this. So there's definitely a very urgent need and desire. The patient population is really going to drive this forward.
That was the scientist Allison McCook talking about the bladder manufacturer Tengian. Check out her feature in the December issue of The Scientist or online at thescientist.com. Also on our website, you can read our daily news blogs and get all the content from The Scientist magazine. That's all for The Scientist podcast this week. Thanks for tuning in.